Part 3. Reign of Regent Matwick, Year 3. Chapter 25. Femturan Ormondo. Somroth pulled his wife Sia closer to him in the dark, relishing the warmth of her skin and the way her body fit so perfectly next to his own. He rested his chin in the soft pillow of her hair. Because he was off duty tonight, they luxuriated in the rare privilege of a night together. His quarters were situated in the enormous army base and barracks outside the capital city of Femturan. Its official name was Iron Valley Protectors Headquarters, but everyone called it the Forge, because this was where raw recruits were forged into disciplined soldiers. The small rooms barely stretched 4 paces in width, but they provided privacy, a perk that Somroth had earned by rising in the ranks 4 levels, from a lowly ember to a mid-level fire tender. Along with barracks and administrative offices, the forge featured practice fields and a stadium that hosted the combats, massive ceremonies during which Oro soldiers competed against each other for prizes and glory. Combats took place at 8-year intervals, and all soldiers and civilians anticipated them keenly. When Somroth was younger, he dreamed of winning laurels for his fencing prowess. He'd even dreamed of challenging the reigning champion, Tulsham, who was famous for besting all comers with his 2-handed greatsword. But, like other normal activities, the combats had been suspended since the coming of the plagues. Zia worked inside the city gates at the Office of Reverence, filling orders that came in from all districts of Ormondo for holy pamphlets. The Office of Reverence had bookbinders and book distributors stationed in many locations to supply materials for worship citadels. Official decree encouraged keeping husbands and wives together because babies these days so rarely survived. Thus, the Office of Reverence diligently allowed Zia to work close to Somroth's postings. When Somroth had been transferred here, the office obligingly reassigned her to Femturan. Unfortunately, neither Somroth nor Zia favoured city life. The capital, filled with huge buildings dominated by the Magi's octagon, now jutted up against a salt marsh. Long ago, Femturan had been a port, allowing Ormondo to ship its precious minerals to the rest of Enea Mon. But centuries of silt build-up from the Iron River and a shift in ocean currents had turned the once thriving harbour into a vast, unnavigable and fetid bog. Zia complained that Femturan's streets thronged with desperate-eyed refugees from failed farming villages. The constant smoke and cacophony from the metalworking concerns gave her headaches. She disliked her lodgings in a hostel along with scores of other women and children. Mostly, she hated the marsh's smell, which was pungent whenever the wind blew in from the east, and so unlike the bracing mountain air where they used to live. Somroth appreciated the honour of being brought to the centre of government, but then his battalion often patrolled the border or escorted ore shipments down from the mountains, and he didn't have to tolerate Femturan unceasingly. If Zia didn't adjust, he would ask for a transfer. He could not be content if she was unhappy. Somroth caressed Zia's full body, muscular, but also womanly soft, lit up in the soft, reflected glow of his fireplace. Proudly, his index finger traced the jewels affixed to the rims of her ears, the fire agate in her right ear from her own career, and the row of 4 red garnets denoting his rank in her left. But right now, he felt sated. What he really wanted was to talk.
Zia, yesterday 3 and 6 addressed the high officers in the stadium.
Hmm? Replied Zia drowsily. He nudged her.
Don't fall asleep yet. I want to tell you about it. Something worries me.
Zia made an effort, propping herself up on her elbow.
What? Magi have addressed you many times. You get used to their burning eyes and the bats that perch on their shoulders. Terror converts to pride. They make it a practice to keep up morale amongst important people like you. Miners or metal workers, priests or protectors.
Aye, but something felt different. Something was amiss.
What?
Three looks very, very ill, he temporized. Six spoke most of the time, but her speech didn't make sense, rambling even.
If Three has been infected by a plague, if he passes to the eternal flames, the others will name a successor for him. We always have Eight. Pozar has decreed that the role is bigger than the person who holds it.
I know, but it makes me nervous to see a Magi so weak.
Sumroth traced the line of Zia's jaw with his thumb.
Six worried me even more. She called out enemies everywhere. Unbelievers, of course, and Weirendale, as usual. But then a list that included most of the other nations in the world.
And she named groups of people we must keep a watch on, including healers, farmers, midwives, animal tenders, teachers, importers, and exporters.
The list went on and on. I almost expected her to list the protectors or the Office of Reverence. You make terrible jests, said Zia, punching him lightly in his ribs.
Nay, I jest not.
Also, she exhorted us not just to kill the enemies and traitors, but to dismember and burn them.
Sumroth winced at the memory.
That's hard.
A little shudder passed through her body.
Did any of the other officers get upset?
Sumroth took a breath.
When Six pressed us to kill animal healers, someone laughed. I don't know why, maybe in surprise. Six lifted up her hands and demanded silence.
It got so deathly quiet, no one dared even sneeze.
The Magi looked out at the crowd.
It felt as if she could see into our hearts and discover the slightest bit of doubt or rebellion.
Then she pointed with her finger like this, and an officer near the front burst into flame. Was he even the one who laughed? Who knows? He paid the price.
Zia grabbed his pointing hand, pulled it down, and interlaced her fingers with his.
Then what happened? She whispered.
What could happen? We never question. We always maintained order. We just moved away from the charred remains and started cheering. She whipped us all to a fine frenzy.
He rubbed his wife's white hair. Like most of his countrywomen, she wore her hair cropped the length of a finger and brushed up. His own cut was similar but shorter.
I felt so isolated, Zia. But then I banged my fist on my armor and shouted too. I didn't want to be the only one in the arena standing still.
I've not seen the backslider pay the final price, but I've felt that way betimes, Zia said. I mean, I've pretended more spirit for a while. But by the end of the Magi speech or the priest's oration, what was pretend became real, and I was filled with the fire, the passion of the blood that is our birthright.
Aye, but yesterday I never truly felt the fire. I felt lost. I feared that Six is weak in her mind. I couldn't shake the feeling that we are being led by priest rulers who are weak in their minds.
Fie, fie, Sumroth! She put her hand over his mouth. Don't say that! You'll put yourself in danger. You put us in danger. If anyone overheard you, no one could save you.
Not your superiors, nor my director?
I know.
He turned over in the small, hard bed. He heard the cries still reverberating.
Duty, strength, the eight, the power of the eight. Long will their flames burn and conquer.
He smelled the odor of charred flesh. He'd feared that Magi Six would read his heart and would next send a fireball to incinerate him. He'd felt shaky with relief when she continued her oration. When had he become a coward? A sham? Though he'd fulfilled every duty conscientiously, perchance he hadn't truly earned the rank of tender. He felt the ridged tattoo above his left brow still slightly new and sore. He couldn't fulfill his duty as protector with honour if he didn't believe. This morning he had practiced his swordplay in the yard with a fury, battering all opponents, hoping exhaustion would quiet his doubts. His arms and hamstrings already ached from the exertion. The officers he'd bested might hold grudges. He'd apologise if he knew who to speak to, but he had no idea who his sparring partners had been. Zia pulled at his muscular shoulder so that he rolled back toward her. She traced the new tattoo above his left brow that denoted his promotion.
Husband, hush. You'll make yourself sick in your mind. Come. I will make you forget about these phantom worries. I know what you need.
She kissed him deeply, then pushed him on his back and rolled her naked body on top of his. He gave himself over to her touch, hoping in the sweet succor of her warmth to find relief from his nagging doubts.